stuff to my hip by now.
Maybe he's sick, Brynna offered innocently, not knowing that Caleb, as a demon demigod, couldn't get sick. Well, he had gotten sick once, but there were extenuating circumstances, and it shouldn't have happened again. God, he prayed that hadn't happened again. As they broke away to head for class, Caleb came rushing down the hall toward them. Nick arched a brow. Something wrong?
My alarm didn't go off.
That's odd.
Yeah, Caleb said sarcastically. You've no idea. Aaron overslept, too.
That was strange. Lucky Charms Legolas would give Nick's mom a run for her money on his ability to keep accurate time and never be late. Not to mention, he kept a rigid military schedule that was terrifying. Instead of a god of war, he should have been one of obsessive-compulsive disorder. Nick screwed up his face. Zeitjagers again?
Not funny.
Really not trying to be. Because Time Guardians carrying adamantine sickles they used to behead those who abused the time sequence weren't something to joke about. Especially not when they looked like jacked-up plague doctors that had escaped from some voodoo horror movie on an acid trip. And they dripped blood all over your only pair of shoes while they followed you around like gruesome shadows you couldn't shake. Yeah, Nick would never joke about that. Maybe there was a good reason for having more than one pair of shoes, after all. Girls might be onto something with that. He was still having nightmares and flashbacks from his last encounter with those creepy things. You know, Nick said slowly, I'm thinking we could all benefit from some therapy. But then, given the stuff we deal with, if we ever began to talk about it to an outsider, they'd lock us up and throw away the key.
Yes, they would.
Caleb led them into class, and having lived in a cage, I don't recommend it. Yeah, but in your case, you had demons eating your entrails on a daily basis.
True, and your father trying to tear my wings off.
Caleb visibly shivered at the memory.
Have I told you today how much I really hated your father?
No, but I feel you, brother. He was not on my party list either. Cody shook her head. You two are so bad. Nick choked indignantly.
Oh, like you had any more love for him than we do.
As I recall, you tried to kill him yourself. Your father was a sadistic beast.
Yes, our point exactly. No one cried when he died.
Nick let Cody enter the classroom first before he headed to his usual seat. Well, you don't have to say it.
He made demon noises under his breath as he cast a disgruntled look at Caleb.
There she goes, trying to civilize me again. What is it with women? God, next thing you know, she's going to tell me not to pick belly lint.
Nick, that's so gross.
See? Covering her eyes with her hand, she shook her head. You're so awful. Thank you, Caleb, for being a gentleman and minding your manners.
No problem. Little House broke me for you. But if it makes you feel any better, Nick, I was much worse than you when she met me.
Laughing, Nick took his seat, and as he dug through his bag, a strange image went through his head. It was of Caleb and Liliana. The image was so raw and vivid and potent that it froze him to the spot. Agonizing grief and physical pain laced through him. Malphus had been wounded in battle. He'd taken a spear straight through his side and been forced into retreat by the Sephirii forces that had fought against the first Malachi's army. After a long pursuit, he'd finally lost his enemies and had found a place with fresh water. Because of the agony of his injuries and the effort it was taking to remain conscious, he didn't have the strength left to waste his powers on concealing his true demonic form. So he lay beside the stream on his stomach with his black wings spread wide and his red skin scuffed and smeared with his black blood. His breathing labored. He'd been trying to stave off the bleeding when he heard the sharp gasp to his left. Furious, he dangled his sword at the interloper, intending to murder whoever had dared disturb him. But the moment his gaze locked onto those two celestial blue eyes that had been filled with fright, he'd hesitated. Those large eyes had dominated the face of an angel, and not the kind he fought against. Her nose was a bit large for her pixie-like face, but it hadn't detracted from her beauty at all. That small flaw had somehow made her even more beautiful. She'd worn her white blonde hair pulled back into a long, thick braid, yet defiant strands had come free to curl and tease her skin. Even though she was obviously terrified of him, she'd bitten her lip and approached him very slowly, cautiously.
"Are you injured?"
Stunned that she wasn't screaming or running away, Malthus scowled at her.
"Can you understand me?"
He bared his fangs as she came closer, then hissed, hoping to send her fleeing. Instead, she froze instantly.
"I mean you no harm, demon. I'm a healer. I can help you if you let me."
Those words baffled him. She was human. Why would she help him? They were enemies in this war. She had to know that. His kind had slaughtered hers by the hundreds everywhere they found them, without fail, without prejudice, without hesitation. Still, she stood there, with her arms held out at her sides. No guile, no deception that he could sense. She seemed as sincere as any creature he'd ever known. Not that he'd known all that many who were sincere. The majority of his acquaintances were backbiting bastards who would betray faster than a heart could beat.
"Please, let me help you. If anyone else finds you here, they'll call the others to slay you."
"Why aren't you calling them?"
"You've personally done me no harm. I don't believe in holding someone accountable for the deeds of others, only what he himself has done."
She moved forward again, until she reached the tip of his outstretched sword that was still coated in the red blood of his vanquished enemies. Only then did she hesitate as she saw it. Malthus lowered the tip to the ground and let the sword fall from his hand. He tucked his black wings down by his sides, then hissed as that action caused more pain to slice through his abdomen. With the most tender expression anyone had ever given him, she knelt by his side and laid a gentle hand on his cheek. It was the first time in his life anyone had given him such a touch. For a full minute, he couldn't breathe as unknown feelings went through him. More than that, her skin smelled of rose water and honey, a delectable scent that awoke a fierce hunger in his soul. Yet it wasn't for her blood or bones. He wasn't sure what he wanted from her.
"You're burning with fever."
He couldn't believe that she didn't recoil from his unnatural blood-red skin or long orange hair. Rather, she cupped his cheek and stared into his yellow demon eyes without flinching as she wiped away the black demon's blood on his cheek and lips.
"Can you stand?"
He nodded. To his even greater shock, she helped him to his feet, and when her gentle hand brushed against his black wings to help support him, he was lost to her kindness.
"There's a cave where I played as a girl, just over that hill."
She jerked her chin to show him the direction.
"No one ever goes there. They believe it's haunted. You should be safe to rest within its shelter, and I can tend your wound and bring you food."
"I still don't understand why you would help me."
"Because you need it."
He shook his head.
"Aren't you afraid of me?"
"Petrified."
And she should be. He towered over her frail, fragile human body. It would take nothing to break her into pieces and use her blood and bone marrow to restore his strength and heal his injuries. He'd torn apart men twice the size of her, and those were trained warriors who'd been armed war heroes. Yet here she stood, unarmed, defenseless, her only armor a thin, light yellow flaxen dress that was so thin he could see the outline of her body whenever the sun passed through it. She didn't even have on a single piece of jewelry she could stab him with. Nothing. Even her nails were trimmed to the quick so that she couldn't scratch him. She was as harmless as a little mouse. A part of him wanted to taste her blood to see if it was as sweet as she smelled. That same part of his soul hated her for daring to stand before him like this, for that innocent trust that said she knew he wouldn't hurt her. It was as if she dared him to prove he was ruthless and uncaring. Things he'd vowed to himself he would always be, that he would feel nothing, numb to the world and all its pain. She was his enemy. The very thing his father sought to protect, Malphus had sworn his sword and army to the utter destruction of every member of her pathetic race, to see them put down like the infectious disease they were, humanity. The very word was bitter on his tongue. Yet as he looked down at her and felt the heat of her hand on his skin, this wasn't hatred inside him. He wanted to comfort her and chase away the frightened light in her eyes. Even more peculiar, he wanted to know what a smile would look like on that innocent face.
"I won't hurt you, little one."
He wasn't sure who was more stunned when those words came out of his mouth, she or he. For the first time, the terror faded from her eyes, and her gaze softened to warmth. Placing her arm about his waist, she gently helped him toward her cave.
"Are all demons as gigantic as you?"
He snorted at her question.
"Depends on the species."
He sucked his breath in sharply as he stumbled on a hidden bramble, and pain hit him anew. She didn't flinch as he put more weight on her than he'd meant to. Amazed by her, he gentled his grip on her shoulder, not wanting to hurt her in any way.
"Are all women as brave as you?"
Finally, a smile curved her lips, and it was as breathtaking a sight as he'd thought.
"Depends on the species."
He'd arched a brow at her flippant, teasing tone.
"Well, aren't you a cheeky one?"
"So says my father. It's ever a fault of mine that I don't know my place. But who better to know my place than I?" says I, "and who so better to determine it? For I will not be hemmed in by anyone else's expectations. This is my life, such as it is, and it will be lived under my rules so long as I have it."
She led him into the dark cave, where his sight quickly adjusted. To him, this was home. Even more surprised by her spirit that was unafraid of the dark he called home, he sat down on the floor while she went to a corner and uncovered a small tinderbox. If he didn't know better, he'd think her part demon, the way she moved about in the darkness as if she could see plainly. But it was merely the fact that she was familiar with the place and knew where everything in it was located. She struck a match and lit a small tallow candle to burn. Holding it aloft, she returned to his side and placed it in a small makeshift sconce she'd created. Once she could see, she returned to his side and knelt down. When she reached for his armored cuirass, he caught her soft hand with his claws.
"What are you doing?"
She gave him a blank stare.
"I was going to inspect your injury. Surely you don't think I could do you harm."
"No,
but trust didn't come easy for him. He'd never had anyone who hadn't sought in the past to give him all manner of pain. That list included his own parents. Reluctantly, he loosened his grip and surrendered to her care. As promised, she didn't hurt him. Rather, she carefully examined his wound, then tore away a section of her underdress to bandage it. That selfless act hit him twofold. One, that she destroyed her own dress for his care, and two, that her touch was feather light and seared him to the core of his rotten soul. When she was done, she sat back to smile down at him.
"You lie still and rest. I shall get you something to eat and drink."
"Thank you."
"You're welcome."
By the way she said that, he knew she wanted something from him, but he had no idea what. After a second, she laughed.
"What's your name?"
"Malphus."
"Malphus?" she repeated in distaste. "That name doesn't suit you at all."
"How do you figure?"
"You're far too handsome to be a Malphus."
Was she insane? He was completely demon in her presence. The one thing he'd learned early in his life was that humans hated them whenever they wore their demon skins. Everything about his kind was repugnant to the human species, yet it didn't seem to faze her at all. Not even the darkness of his blood or the length of his claws that had been designed to shred human flesh seemed to bother her. She acted as if he were as normal to her as daylight. And it softened his hardened warrior's heart in a way nothing ever had before.
"What name would you have for me then, little one?"
She pursed her lips into an adorable frown as she considered it. Then, to his complete consternation, she reached up and gently brushed his orange hair back from his face so that she could cup his cheek and study his features.
"Caleb."
It left him speechless that she'd instinctively picked a name so close to his summoning name, as if she could sense it somehow.
"But more than that, Caleb," he shuddered. "Why such an awful thing?"
She dropped her hand to the center of his chest.
"Because I sense in you a true heart, a faithful heart. And by your wounds and scars, I can tell that you are fearless. So I shall call you Caleb, the faithful, fearless warrior who defends what he believes with everything he has. That's what I see when I look upon you. Not a demon, an ever-courageous, noble warrior. One day, I suspect, you shall look into a mirror and see the same noble man I do."
And with those handful of words, Liliana shattered the icy barrier that had caged his heart since the moment he'd been forsaken to this harsh, bitter world without friend or family.
"I can assure you that I will never look in a mirror and see a man there, at least not that I don't scream, then kill it."
She laughed.
"You know what I mean.
Now let me see about collecting your sword before it's found and they begin looking for you. Then I'll make sure you have supplies until you're well enough to rejoin your army." Malphus's breath had left him in a rush as he realized that he'd completely forgotten his weapon. What the hell? He'd never in his life set his sword aside, never been disarmed by anyone. Until now. Malphus had set it aside without a second thought. What magic did this human wield so effortlessly that she could ensnare the most lethal demon commander in the entire Mavromino army? For weeks now, he'd been pursued by their deadliest forces. Even wounded, he'd put down their best soldiers with minimal effort. And she had done nothing more than smile, and he laid aside his sword.
"I'm an idiot."
One who expected her to return with enemies to use his sword to kill him. After all, they would need such a weapon, forged by the gods, to damage his flesh, as mortal weapons were harmless against him. But she didn't. Instead, she returned, just as she'd promised, his weapon in hand, and a basket of food for him in the other. Without a single reservation, she'd handed his sword to him, then given him food and drink, and redressed his wound. When she finally left the cave later that day, she'd taken his heart with her, a heart he hadn't even known he possessed. With nothing more than a handful of spirited words and a kindness he'd never known, she'd taken the most lethal demon ever spawned by the most vicious, callous creatures the source had spat out, and captivated him. Centuries later, Caleb still loved her. He still grieved for her and kept her memory sacred. And he continued to use the name she'd given him to remind himself that his wife alone had seen something inside him besides a monster. Liliana had taught him to fight, not simply against his father because he hated him, but for his convictions, because that was what a man did. It was the right thing to do.
"I pray that you never again reach for this sword, Lord Husband. But should the day ever come when you must return to war, then it should be to protect what you love. Never again for hatred or fear, and never should you battle for vengeance.
Nick felt the same emotions Caleb had felt on the day he'd plastered his demonic sword into the wall of his cottage bedroom, wrapped in enchanted cloth and bound with a protection spell to keep his enemies from locating him. He'd promised his wife that he was done with battle forever. Never again would he fight for any cause. His only goal was to remain home with her on her farm in the guise of a humble human. But the gods hadn't allowed him that peace. They dragged him back to their war against his will. Yet, true to his word, he hadn't returned to fight for the Mavromino. He'd reemerged as a champion for the Colossum, the side of light. His love for his wife had proven far greater than his hatred for his father, and to please his Liliana and save her people, he'd fought with his enemies and protected them with every ounce of his demonic strength. And he continued to do so even now. Nick scowled as he looked over at his friend and saw both faces of Caleb, the demon Lord Malthus, and his loyal, if often surly, bodyguard, who never hesitated to put his life on the line to protect him. Caleb looked up and froze as he caught Nick staring at him. He narrowed his dark gaze on him.
What's that look mean? I swear, Gosha, you cop a feel, and I will put you through a wall.
Laughing, Nick blew him a kiss.
Is there a problem back there, Mr. Gautier?
Ms. Pantal asked.
No, ma'am. Caleb was just making goo-goo eyes at me again and staring at my chest with evil intent. Please tell him to stop sexually harassing me, as it's making me very uncomfortable.
Nick clutched the collar of his shirt together and leaned away from Caleb.
Caleb choked while several students burst out laughing.
Ms. Pantal rolled her eyes.
In that case, I will remind you both of the no public displays of affection rules that we have for the school, so behave and turn in your homework.
Yes, ma'am.
Nick pulled it out. He'd just gotten comfortable again when the door opened to admit a new student. Something that didn't happen often in their small, private parochial school. And it wasn't just because St. Richard's was hard to get into due to its high academic standing, but rather from the fact that the school had been set up as a place for praetors to learn how to mingle with humans and not let the stress throw them into their animal states. While there were a handful of Barretos, or normal humans, who had no idea they were attending school with shapeshifters, the majority of the student body was either shapeshifters or the children of squire families, squires who had been in service to dark hunters like Kyrian and Asheron for generations. As such, the squires usually sent their kids to private school together so that they could be watched by older squires to ensure that no one messed with them, especially since their enemies might want to take their kids hostage or kill them to get back at their parents or the Dark Hunters in retaliation for these centuries of protecting humans from their supernatural predators. It also allowed the shapeshifter families a controlled environment for their children so that they could have playtime with humans where, if they had an accident and shifted into their animal bodies, the humans wouldn't flip out and call the authorities. As squires or their children, they all knew about werehunters, and they could help cover for them with the humans here who didn't know about them. It gave the werehunters a way to practice being in the normal world so that they could acclimate. Nick had been one of those Barretos students at St. Richard's until 2.5 years ago, when his best friends had turned on him and Kyrian had saved his life. For some reason that still eluded Nick, the ancient Greek had taken a liking to him and decided to give him a hand up and bring him into this amazing world. Now he was a squire at an age that was unheard of, since squires were supposed to be 18 before they could be sworn into their oaths. But Kyrian had pulled strings, and so here Nick was, the youngest squire in council history. And this new guy they were introducing, he didn't appear to be a squire. Nick glanced at Caleb.
What do you think?
Caleb shrugged nonchalantly. Ms. Pantal cleared her throat as she read his card.
Everyone, this is Nathan St. Cyr, Nathan's a new student who just moved to New Orleans from New York. I know everyone will be on your best behavior and welcome him in. Mr. St. Cyr, if you'll take an empty seat, we'll get started.
An odd sensation went through Nick as Nathan neared him. Like a wire had been touched to his spine and sent a jolt through his entire central nervous system. Not that anyone had ever done that to him, but that was what he imagined such a thing would feel like. As Nathan neared his desk, he inclined his head to him, then sat down on the other side of Cody.
Yeah, that didn't endear him any. You better not be eyeballing my girl, punk.
Nick would snatch those blue eyes out of that boy's head and use them for marbles. The Malachi in him was rising up and breathing fire down Nick's neck. It was hard to leash the beast when he came calling like this. Every part of Nick wanted a piece of Nathan for daring to trespass on Cody's personal space. Especially when he leaned over a second later and with a charming grin brushed his hand against Cody's arm.
Do you have a pencil I can borrow? Mine must have fallen out of my backpack.
Sure.
Cody handed him the one she was holding. His grin turned even more debonair as he ran it under his nose and smelled the stylus as if he could still detect her light perfume on the wood.
I'll treasure it always. Thank you for your kindness, my noble lady.
When Nick started to rise, Caleb caught his arm.
Down, boy. Don't make me smack your nose with a rolled-up newspaper.
Nick cut a glare at his best friend to let Caleb know he could be a worthy substitution as a whipping boy if he didn't let go. Cody turned toward Nick.
Is it me, or was that gross?
And that right there saved Nathan's life. Leave it to his girl to be oblivious. He was relieved until Nathan turned back toward her. Suddenly, Cody's desk slid 4 inches closer to Nick's and farther from Nathan's. She turned an indignant glare at him for his audacity. At the sharp scraping that made most people cringe, everyone in the room shot around to look for the source of the sudden sound. Nick forced himself not to cringe at the involuntary use of his Malachi powers. Clearing his throat, he glanced at his teacher.
Sorry, my foot got caught under Cody's desk.
Why was your foot under her desk?
Nick shrugged.
I'm too tall for the desk, and my feet have a mind of their own. You've seen me walking down the hall, Ms. Pantal. I never know where my arms or legs are located, hence all the bruises I keep.
She rolled her eyes.
Keep your feet under your own desk, Nick. Stop disrupting class, or I'll send you to the office.
Something stabbed him in the leg, hard. Nick let out a sharp curse, and though it wasn't in English, Ms. Pantal had enough Cajun in her to unfortunately know exactly what the word meant.
That's it. Get to the office, now.
But
no buts. Go.
Growling low in his throat, Nick got up to retrieve the pass from her hand. He glanced back to see the sad pout on Cody's face as his gaze went to Nathan. For the merest instant, he could have sworn he saw his eyes flash red. But that would be an impossibility. If Nathan had demon in him, Nick would see it. He'd sense it. For that matter, he'd even glimpsed Asheron's true demonic form, and Ash had more than enough power to camouflage himself from anyone. But not a Malachi. Nothing and no one could hide themselves from Nick. He was the Geiger counter of preternatural species. It was both their gift and their curse. Which got back to the weird sensation on his spine. He needed a serious consultation with his fellow Power Rangers, but that wouldn't happen until after he figured out how many hours of detention this little miserable morning was going to cost him.
Maybe I'll get lucky, and when I go after Zavid, something will eat me, and I won't have to finish detention.
A boy could dream. Taking the slip from Ms. Pantal's hand, he headed for the door and took one last look at Cody. Instead of watching him, she was saying something to Nathan. Nick's vision darkened in such a way that he had to catch himself before he let loose his own demonic eyes and freaked out half his class. His breathing ragged, it took everything he had not to blast the door from its hinges.
Okay, stop! Aaron would be the first to warn him off his anger.
This was the gateway to a place he didn't want to go. It was what had forced his father to live out his free life in the human realm, incarcerated in a maximum security prison. That had been the only place a Darian could stay, where his frequent violent outbursts that resulted in the flying entrails of whoever had annoyed him could be contained. Every time Nick exploded into those powers, he put a cosmic target out to his enemies, told them exactly where to find him and anyone who was near him. The only way to have peace in his life was to keep his temper and remain dormant. Yeah, but he wanted that kid's throat. And by the time he reached the principal's office, he was good and livid, his palms damp and his heart racing. He even felt his temple pounding. Too pissed to sit, he paced in front of the chairs outside Mr. Head's office and half expected to go carry white on everybody. All that was missing was the pig's blood. Suddenly, a tiny light appeared in his peripheral, one that wouldn't be all that noticeable to most people. It was only slightly larger than a speck of dust in a sunbeam, but Nick knew the source of the ethereal blue light. It was a will-o'-the-wisp, or more affectionately, Lucky Charms Legolas. He stopped pacing to whisper, "Legolas, what are you doing here?"
"I felt you burning them powers, and I wondered if you were in trouble. Or are you trying to summon Noir? Because if you are, let me know. I need to pack some bags before I abandon your sorry hide to him and his forces to save me on Ars."
Nick released a scoffing laugh, as if Aaron would sooner cut his own throat than hightail it out. One thing about the Celtic war god, he never backed away from a fight. Aaron manifested into his shimmering shade body. More shadow than form, it wouldn't be visible to anyone other than Nick, or another higher-level paranormal creature.
"There now. You all cocked and dry?"
Sighing, Nick nodded.
"Thank you. So what got you all unlaced?"
Nick felt his temper rise again.
"There's a prick in my classroom making eyes at Cody. Go kill him."
Aaron burst out laughing, until he realized Nick was serious.
"What? You're serious, like?
Do I look like I'm joking?"
"Nay. You look like we need to loosen a knob on your lid before you blow your gasket and pop your fool head off."
Aaron tisked, then moved as if to chuck Nick on his arm, but since he wasn't in his physical body, his hand passed through Nick's shoulder and left a peculiar tingle there.
"Sorry, boyo, but you know I can't kill a man for simply eyeing your girl."
"Then pluck his eyes out.
Bring me his male parts. At the very least, snap off a finger."
Aaron's eyes widened as Nick's voice deepened to the demonic level.
"Having some trouble there, son? Little bit?"
"Little bit of what, Gautier?" Nick froze at the sound of Mr. Head's voice.
Great. That was all he needed, the principal thinking he warranted a visit to the psych ward.
"Sorry, Mr. Head, I was thinking about my next class. I needed a little bit more time to finish the reading for it."
"Well, come on in and let's discuss this latest event that has you darkening my doorway. I can't wait to hear your version of the matter."
Nick met Aaron's gaze, then sent his thoughts to him.
"If you won't kill him for me, at least go keep an eye on the troll. And if he lays one hand on her, make it a bloody stump."
Aaron shook his head.
"Hold that temper, Malachi. It's gonna get you into all kinds of trouble."
Yeah, it already had. Sighing, he headed into the office. Aaron tried not to be amused as he watched Nick vanish. It wasn't funny, yet he couldn't help being entertained. He'd never seen the boy get jealous before, at least not like this. And that made him curious about the Nathan boy who'd evoked such a powerful emotion. Poor child had no idea what he was courting. With that thought, he turned back into his puka form and headed for Caleb's old raunchy smell. Bad thing about it, Dave couldn't miss their unique stench. Though the last time he'd pointed that out to the ancient demon and handed him a bar of soap, Caleb had gotten a mite testy about it. But as Aaron neared the door of the classroom, he felt a peculiar presence, one that made his blood run cold. Before he could act, he was sucked into a vortex.
Chapter 3. "So, do I have to go punch Stone in the face or just burp in Richardson's class?"
Nick scowled at Caleb's bizarre question as he took his backpack from him in the hallway outside their next class.
Do what?
I'm trying to gauge how much detention I need to earn to match yours. Therefore, I'm asking for the severity of my grievance and who to assault for it. Nick snorted.
I don't know. Depends on Richardson's mood. With that evil witch, you could get more detention for the burp than you would if you cold-cocked Stone and made him sterile. Which might not be a bad thing. Future generations would thank you for it.
Very true. Caleb brushed his dark hair back.
So, you'll be proud. I've finally mastered my ability to manipulate the weak-minded without turning anyone into a goat or exploding the space-time continuum. I got none.
Instead of being happy that Nick's power had worked for once, and nothing had exploded, melted, or summoned a terrifying higher deity or hell beast from another dimension, Caleb grimaced.
While I am more than thrilled at the prospect of not having to suffer through another round of teenage after-school angst and drama with you, I feel the need to caution you about using those powers for something so trivial. Remember, magic comes with a cost, even for a Malachi. Ain't no such thing as a free ride in life, my friend. Sooner or later, we all pay the piper. And when that bastard comes home to roost, he always craps right on your head and ugly oversized shirt.
Duly noted, Nick sidled up to Cody. You mad at me, Cher?
She paused to rake a suspicious grimace over him.
Should I be? What mischief have you wrought now that I don't know about?
For sending Aaron to spy on you.
That took every bit of friendliness out of her stare. In fact, he could flash freeze fire with that stare, and a certain part of his anatomy crawled back into his body as she scorched him with it. When was this?
While I was mind-melding with Head?
She glowered even more. Aaron didn't come into the room.
Yeah, he did. I sent him straight away.
No, he didn't, they said in unison.
His stomach knotting, Nick gave each one of them a bitter glare as they headed for their next period. Yes, he did, because he knows I would not be happy with him if he didn't, and an unhappy Malachi kicks his culo loco.
Well, Caleb said dryly, we can stand here and argue like children until one of us sticks his tongue out at the other, or you can call him and see. But I'm here to tell you that the Celt did not step foot in that room. I'd have known it. I didn't even smell him in the building.
Cody groaned. I wish you two would lay off the odor thing with each other. Neither of you smell. Good grief. Ignoring her chiding, Nick pulled out his phone.
Prepare to eat those words, Calibu. One slice humble pie coming up piping hot.
He dialed for his favorite surly war god, then waited. And waited. And waited some more. It rolled to voicemail. Okay, that was not good. Scowling, he met Caleb's smug expression.
Why would he have left when he said he wouldn't?
It's Aaron.
Exactly, he's not you.
Nick put the phone in his pocket. He doesn't know a lot of people here. It's not like him to run off and visit anyone, or go trolling after loose women on Bourbon Street. Unlike a certain Dave I know, he cleared his throat meaningfully.
You're just jealous you can't go in any of those clubs, babyface.
Luckily, Cody didn't take him seriously and ignored that jibe. He has a point, Caleb.
Caleb sighed. Yeah, he does. Two, if you count the one in his head. And I hate it. Because if Aaron's missing, it doesn't bode well, and I'm getting really tired of ill bodings.
Nick wrinkled his nose at the term. Ill bodings? Is that a phrase?
Of course it is. I just made it up.
Nick snorted. Fine, whatever. We gotta find him. If for no other reason, we don't need him to do something that could out himself in public.
Yeah,
Caleb said sarcastically. They have laws against exposing yourself in public. Cody let out a long-suffering sigh. I think I know now why the gods made the two of you so incredibly hot. You'd be insufferable otherwise. Laughing at her uncharacteristic barb that proved she'd been hanging out with them way too much, Nick paused in the hallway as he saw Nathan walking past them. A few feet away, Nathan stopped and turned around in a slow circle as he attempted to decipher their misbegotten room numbers and his schedule. He almost felt sorry for the kid, since he still remembered his first days here when he'd been just as lost and confused. The room numbers on the first floor had been arranged by some chaos demon bent on driving the unwary to utter madness. They really made no sense in anyone's world, except whatever drunken lunatic had initially placed them on the doors for some kind of sick mind game. As much as Nick hated himself for the compassion, he found himself wandering over to the warthog. You need help?
Room 114? Nathan scratched his head. Shouldn't it be right here, between 112 and 115?
He gestured at the red lockers, where a door ought to be.
But then I can't find room 113 either.
That's because 113 is the gym.
Nathan scowled.
Huh?
Exactly. Ours is not to question why, it's merely to go to class and try not to cry.
Nick laughed at the truly confounded expression on the kid's face.
Welcome to St. Richard's of the severely dyslexic and homicidally crazed. Room 114 is the biology lab down the hall to the right, next to the bathroom and across from room 130, because that makes all the sense in the world to absolutely nobody.
He shot one brow north.
Yeah, don't ask. Logic and sanity waved bye-bye to this place a long time ago. Why do you think they call it an institution?
Nathan laughed. Guess so. Thanks.
No problemo.
He held his hand out toward Nick. I'm Nathan, by the way.
Nick.
With a slight bit of hesitation, he shook his hand, though now that he was close to the guy, he didn't know why he'd been so weird earlier. Nathan seemed okay, except for the fact that he was the same 6'4" height and Nick rather liked towering over other people. He had so little ego in most things that it was the one and only thing he could normally take pride in that no one other than Acheron Zev and Papa Bear Peltier could take away from him. And Acheron and Papa Bear positively dwarfed his Cajun hide. At almost 7 feet in height, the two of them were truly giants in the modern world. Nick squinted at Nathan. There weren't any horns hiding in that mass of thick, dark blonde hair. No other warning bells went off as their skin touched. His blue eyes were clear and normal, intelligent, not demon-esque, no diamond-shaped pupils. No pimples either, rank dog. And of course the punk was better dressed. But then who wasn't? Since Charisse Gaucher thought these tacky, heinous Hawaiian shirts of the middle-aged tourist kept her only son out of trouble, and they definitely were the best birth control ever invented, because no female looked at him and thought, hey, gotta get me some of that. Nick wore them with as much pride as he could muster. For the record, that amount of pride would fit onto the tip of a flea's needle. Dropping his hand, Nathan glanced past Nick's shoulder to where Cody and Caleb were waiting.
Yeah, Cody told me you were her boyfriend. Sorry if I pissed you off earlier. I had no idea.
But I should have known that a girl that pretty would have been taken. I was just kind of hoping, you know.
Nick would have felt a little better had Nathan not dropped his gaze meaningfully down to his garishly orange glow-in-the-dark shirt. But he was man enough to take it. Besides, if the school lost power, this shirt doubled as a glow stick. So, who would feel the fool then?
Sorry I overreacted.
Nathan snorted. It's okay, I get it. I'm the new kid in town and I overstepped. Won't happen again. I promise.
Yeah, thanks straight on that.
The bell rang. With a sharp, nervous twitch, Nathan shifted his books.
Down the hall, right side, across from 130.
That's it.
Thanks again.
As Nathan left, Nick had that feeling that he lived this moment before. A phantom memory that hung just at the edge of his mind, teasing and annoying. He could see the faintest outlines of it, but the harder he tried to look at it, the more elusive it became. What was his mind trying to tell him? Why did he feel like this particular moment was a repeat? It was the strangest sense of deja vu. He went back to Cody and Caleb.
Is it me, or is there something oddly familiar about this day?
Cody nodded.
I keep thinking that, too. And the same with Nathan. I feel like I've seen him before, somewhere.
Scratching at his chin, Caleb shrugged.
I have no comment. Humans all look alike to me. And all my days run together, even the ones where we're fighting demons.
Nick knew he wasn't serious about the human comment. He was just being contrary. However,
so Nathan is definitely human, right?
Cody pulled back.
Yeah. Why?
I don't know. I had a strange sensation when he first appeared earlier. Kind of like my Wonder Twin powers activated for no reason. It's why I'm walking around like a cat in a Doberman factory. I can't shake the unsettled feeling I had. Makes me wish I still had Nashira in my pocket. Not that she'd have given me a straight answer. Still, I'd have felt better with her cryptic crap than being completely blind, going with nothing but a bad feeling in my gut. Caleb groaned. Bad feelings in your gut give me an ulcer.
Tell me about it.
He laughed as he went into class and checked his phone for messages. Still nothing from Aaron. Something was definitely up. It wasn't like Legolas to space like this. He didn't just drift off and vanish for no reason.
Caleb?
He nodded.
I'm on it. I already heard your nervous thoughts about our errant irritant.
Out loud, he got up and went to ask to go to the bathroom. Nick wanted to go too, but knew better than to ask. Teacher would never approve that. One student out okay. Two equaled delinquents up to no good in the minds of the establishment. Dang inconvenience when the safety of the entire world was at stake.
Maybe I should fake a heart attack.
Nah, he knew better. Karma was a bitch, and he didn't mean Karma Devereaux, who could be quite special when stirred. Real Karma had a way of delivering up nasty retribution, and any time he ever told even the smallest lie, it came back on him with interest. If he faked a heart attack, with his luck, some coronary hell beast would rise up to rip his heart out and eat it, or worse, feed it to him during lunch. That was just how Nick's luck went. He was the type of guy who could buy a lottery ticket, scratch it off, and it would be a bill he'd have to pay. As Nick started taking notes, another thought occurred to him. Where was Nashira? He hadn't heard from her in a while now, either. Nor Dagon, for that matter. His Power Rangers had abandoned him. They didn't normally do that. Definitely weren't supposed to do that. As his generals, they were under his direct control and were supposed to stay near him at all times. Not just because he could come under fire from Grimm and his forces at any heartbeat, but because they were not used to the modern world. All of them had been kept imprisoned in various hell realms for centuries and had no idea how to really function in modern society. Other than Caleb and Cody. Caleb, because he'd been the right hand of Nick's father and had been out in the world even longer than Adarian had, and way longer than Nick, and Cody, because she'd never been sequestered from people. Not to mention that, unlike the others, she actually liked humanity and didn't want to see them die screaming in agony inside a fiery pit of demon breath. Nashira could function alone a tiny bit, only because she'd been able to hear and see from the confines of her book enchantment. But Zev, Dagon, and Aaron, they did not need to interact with the general public without direct and intense supervision. At all times. Ever. Heavy emphasis on the ever part. Yeah, his ulcer was growing like a radiated lizard in a Godzilla movie. And if he didn't hear from one of them soon, it was going to have a baby the size of the Empire State Building. Will this day ever end? Nick cringed as the thought went through his head and he quickly glanced up at the ceiling.
Yo, up there?
I said day end. D-A-Y. Day. Not world. Day. Please do not get those two words confused or mistake my request, because I know how you get when you want to prove a point to me. I don't need that lesson today. Really. Thank you. PTB. Peace out. Now, if he could just keep the bad luck fairy parked for a bit, he might be all right. Caleb came back into the room with a look on his face that added a good 6 feet to the ulcer. Nick arched his brow.
No sign of him.
Nick made a sound of distress, which caused the other students to turn and stare at him. He flashed a bashful grin.
Puberty. It's so embarrassing.
Excuse me? His teacher asked.
Everyone was staring at me like I'd grown another head, so I was trying to lighten the mood.
How about you lighten it on your own time, Mr. Gauthier?
Yes, ma'am.
Nick dropped his gaze to his textbook and pretended to study so as not to get into any more trouble. Last thing he needed was another trip to the office. That would get him suspended. While he could pull the mind trick once,
He couldn't erase the records that said he'd been up there less than an hour ago. So unless he committed a crime, which he wasn't willing to do, he had to calm his nervous body down. Releasing a zen breath, he sent his thoughts to Caleb.
Did you learn anything else?
When he didn't get a response, he glanced over to his bodyguard.
Caleb?
He acted as if he couldn't hear him.
Okay.
Had he pissed him off? Nick turned toward Cody.
Are you two talking right now?
Like Caleb, she didn't so much as blink in response to his question. Now that was really odd. Even when they were fighting, she at least gave him dirty looks.
Cody? I can see a bra strap.
She definitely didn't hear him, because even if she'd been mad at him for something, she would have checked to make sure that it wasn't showing. That was a pet peeve of hers. Instead, she carried on with their assignment, oblivious to his comment. What the heck? Worried, Nick held out his hand toward his pencil and attempted to command it with his telekinesis. Normally, it would fly into his grasp without any effort. Not this time.
No, 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 no.
Fear wrapped around his heart at the thought of his powers being drained. But how? He was the Malachi. No one could do that to him. No one other than his son. And he'd done nothing that could cause that. And he meant nothing. Impure thoughts notwithstanding, after all, he was a healthy teenage boy, and those couldn't really be helped, especially not when he had a girlfriend who was exceptionally pretty and smelled really nice. But that being said, all they'd done was kiss. Nothing more. Having been born to a teen mother, and having spent the whole of his life raising her, he wasn't anxious to start parenting someone else anytime soon. He had enough paranormal brats he was responsible for already. Running after them and cleaning up their messes kept him plenty busy. And then there was Kyrian, who was in a special class by himself. So, no, there was no one who could drain his powers. Yet the hairs on the back of his neck rose as he had the sudden sensation of being watched. Glancing around the fluorescent-lit room, he caught the gaze of Stone Blakemore fastened on him like he was the barely clad centerfold of the swimsuit edition of Sports Illustrated. Yeah, that was some major stink eye. Not like he'd done anything to Stone, ever. He basically left the knuckle-dragging werewolf alone. But Stone had hated him since the moment he walked through the school doors. It was as if Stone had smelled the Malachi in his jeans and reacted to it on some primal level.
Nick?
It took him a second to realize Cody was speaking to him.
Yeah? You all right?
He blinked, slowly. Honestly, he was a little lightheaded.
I think so.
Why?
The bell?
Nick glanced around and realized the room was empty. Cody and Caleb were standing beside him with worried frowns.
What the heck? He'd just been looking at Stone, hadn't he?
Something's wrong. I was trying to talk to you both with telepathy. Didn't you hear me?
No.
Cody knelt by his side and brushed the hair back from his forehead so that she could press her hand against his skin to test for a fever.
You were flushed and clammy.
Biting her lip in an adorable manner, she glanced up at Caleb.
Can a Malachi get sick?
Caleb shook his head. Not once his powers come in.
Grateful for her concern, Nick caught her hand and kissed her fingers.
Could it be the eye messing with me?
She grimaced at Nick.
Please tell me you left that thing at home.
It's in my pocket. I was going to use it to play the lottery after school. She said something under her breath he was pretty sure was a major curse in one of her parents' native tongues.
Why?
Now there was the tone an impatient parent used when their kid did something exceptionally bright like stick tweezers in an outlet.
It wasn't good for anything else. I figured it owed me a Powerball for the trauma it's put me through.
Spreading her fingers wide, she had an expression on her face that said if she held his Malachi powers, she'd be force-choking him. Right now. Caleb placed a steadying hand on her shoulder.
Remember, you love him, Cody.
Wondering why?
I ask myself that every time you say it out loud.
Way to prop up my ego there, buddy.
Nick brushed his hand against his forehead and squinted in an attempt to clear his vision.
You think the eye's messing with me?
No.
Caleb picked Nick's backpack up to carry it for him.
But you look weak.
like your father used to get right after you'd visit him in prison.
Cody's jaw went slack.
What are you saying?
I said what I'm saying.
Caleb held his hand out to Nick.
Give me your fist.
Why? Just do it and stop whining.
Suspicious of what he intended, Nick didn't like that tone. Talk about things that didn't bode well.
And when he obeyed and Caleb used his claw to slice open part of his hand, he knew why. She's...
Hey! They hurt you, dick!
Caleb ignored his words and cursed as he released Nick's bleeding hand.
You think that hurts? You've got no idea, and we have a massive problem.
His breathing labored. He retracted his claws and narrowed his gaze on Cody.
You know the cosmic laws. He's my master. I shouldn't have been able to harm him at all. The only way for me to do that...
He jerked his chin toward the blood on Nick's hand.
Something's draining the Malachi out of him.
How's that possible?
Cody breathed.
I don't know. I've never heard of it before.
The color faded from Cody's cheeks. Caleb, if anyone finds out about this...
Believe me, Neria, I know. He's dead.
Chapter 4.
Aaron pressed the heel of his hand to his eyes as he tried to keep his skull from splitting apart. Though to be honest, he wouldn't mind it breaking open, so long as it stopped aching like this.
Please, anything, just stop hurting.
He blinked open his other eye to see if he could figure out where in the blessed bog he might be, because he had a bad feeling he wasn't at home in Caleb's house. By the crappy, moldy, pungent, stale stench of the place, it wasn't St. Richard's, unless he'd somehow gotten locked in the bottom of the boy's dirty laundry chute. And no one had bothered to do laundry in a few dozen decades. Maybe longer.
Gah! I'll never complain about the Dave smell again.
To be honest, he'd rather bury his nose in the smoking pits of Caleb's hairy arms after his football practice in August than inhale this wretched stench. It smelled worse than the Dagda's boots after he'd been chasing the Morrigan around the bend. The moment he sat up, he froze. 2 inches from his nose was the ugliest dog he'd ever seen. It made Cunanan look like a swan. All it needed was to have red ears and be howling, and he'd know his death was imminent.
Here now, puppy. I'm sure I can find a nice slipper for you to chew on, eh? If you hand me a shoe, I'll shove it up where the sun don't shine, Irishman.
Dropping his hand, Aaron cracked a grin at the snide tone.
Not Irish, if you want to be technical. And who are you, Scooby? Not Scooby. Hellhound? Mostly, if you want to be technical. Snotty little bastard, aren't you? You stay here any length of time, and you will be too. And here would be...
Aaron let his voice trail off meaningfully.
Asmodea.
Of course it was.
Aaron groaned out loud. I'm assuming we're on the bad side of the fence. Is there a good side? Thorns. I know nothing of a thorn.
And that answers that. Aaron glanced around at the dank, iridescent black walls of his makeshift prison. They bled like an oozing oil pit. At least he wasn't bound. Not that it would have done them any good. Hard to pin a puka with shackles, and while he was still a bit chafed at his family for what they'd done to him with their cursing, there was something to be said for it. Sitting back, he looked up at the eerie blue lights that radiated above their heads. They pulsed like a living creature. He grimaced at the sight of what he was pretty sure was the remains of a poor beast who'd had a much worse day than his. Thank the gods his innards didn't glow after death. He'd hate to have his guts used in such a manner.
You didn't happen to see what brought me here, did you, boyo? Tahiki demons.
Well, that explained the stench. They were the polecats of the demon world. It'd be weeks before he'd get that off his skin.
Now, I'm gonna ask a ridiculously rhetorical question. No, there's no way out of here.
You could have at least given me the satisfaction of asking it. But since you ruined that, I have another. My master has misplaced his own hellhound. Any chance you might be familiar with him? His name's Zavid.
You serve the Malachi?
Aaron hesitated in his answer. One thing he learned eons ago. You volunteer no facts until you knew what side of the matter your opponent was aligned to. And he knew nothing of this new friend.
I don't serve anyone.
A low, insidious moan echoed around them from no known source. The black wolf crouched low and began growling at the wall to Aaron's left.
What's that? Noir's servants. If you are friend or servant to the Malachi, they're coming to make you regret it.
And what are you?
I'm no friend of Noir's nor Azura's. But if you can show me this thorn, I will be the best friend you've ever made.
Rising to his feet, Aaron stepped away as every warning in his body went off simultaneously. This was a little too easy.
And why would I be wanting to take you anywhere, when you're the one who'd be knowing the way when I don't? Not like I got a set of keys to the kingdom. You could have left here at any time. Why did you wait on me, when you didn't know I was coming? Or did you?
A flash of light blinded him an instant before the wolf became a tall, thin, male demon.
You're just all kinds of smart, aren't you? Pity that.
You know that won't break him, right? Noir turned a ball-shriveling glare toward Grimm that would have sent anyone else in this dismal realm scurrying for a hole to vanish into. Almost 7 feet in height, the ancient primal god held an insidious beauty that only the source of all evil could possess. His black hair and eyes were as soulless as his actions, and there was a wicked light that flickered in the depths of those cold eyes that seemed to match his dark, burgundy, demonic armor. He tossed his blood-red cape back over his shoulder.
Are you trying to piss me off? No. But that would be a sweet bonus.
Noir actually laughed, something that caused all the demons around them to run away like rodents fleeing a pending explosion, which was most likely what they thought that unnatural sound portended. The ancient god reached out and grabbed Grimm's pale hair. His mouth curled into the semblance of a cruel, twisted smile before he jerked Grimm against his chest and gave him a bone-shattering embrace.
I've missed you, boy.
He placed a kiss on the top of Grimm's head, then released him. Quicker than Grimm could blink, he backhanded him so hard that Grimm saw stars from it.
But if you backtalk me again, I'll rip out your entrails and throw them to the slug demons to eat.
Wiping the blood from his nose and mouth, Grimm forced himself not to show how much that blow had staggered him, or the fact that he still wasn't seeing straight from it, as his face continued to throb and ache to distraction. Holy crap. For an old fart whose strength had waned, Noir could pack a wallop. He passed an angry, pain-filled glare to Laguerre, who held absolutely no sympathy for him in her cold, dark eyes. But then, she was Noir's daughter. He grimaced at the blood on his hand. He'd forgotten just how much he hated being around Azura and Noir. Now, being virtually trapped with them and dependent on them, if he ever laid hands on that sniveling Malachi, Gaucher would know pain unimaginable. When people talked about having bad in-laws, they had no idea what true misery meant. They should have to spend a weekend with his. These two ancient beings were a large part of why he'd left Laguerre centuries ago. As much as he'd once loved her, and as much fun as they'd had in war together, it wasn't worth tolerating her demented, psychotic parents and their volatile tantrums, not even for a dinner date. And he'd forgotten just how much Laguerre favored her father. But now that they stood side by side, the resemblance was uncanny. Same coal-black eyes that held no feeling or regard for anyone else. Same patrician features, smug expressions, and dark hair, only while Noir's was short, Laguerre's fell to her waist in spiraling curls.
just like her father, she'd sprang from her mother's womb, sword in her hand, ready to kill any and everyone who happened into her path. No wonder the ancient humans had once deemed her the fire bitch of the gods, Herit Anat, Anat the Terror, etc. Back then, she'd gone by many names and even more epitaphs. Ancient humans had left her untold offerings in their temples, hoping to buy her favor so that she'd leave them alone. As if. Instead, the two of them had led untold wars and conquests throughout the human lands. Everywhere they went, slaughter followed. For centuries, they'd been an invincible team. Lagaer as the goddess of war, and he as the god of death. Their army of demons and damned had torn up the entire earth. How he missed those days of freedom and bloody fun. Now. Grim pressed his thumb against the tooth Noir's blow had loosened. He was trapped here, useless and bored. Worse, he was irrelevant. He, who had once so terrified humanity to the point they couldn't breathe his name without shaking in terror and dying of fright, was now reduced down in this modern age to a cartoon character who made appearances in video games and on birthday greeting cards. They'd turned him into a chibi. The indignities never stopped. Lagaer sighed.